to the Resilient Migrant Podcast, a podcast where African immigrants get to talk about their experiences as they assimilate to a different country. This is your host, Brenda Mure.
Hi, today I have my guest, Beatrice Waithaka. Hi, Beatrice.
Hi, Brenda.
It's nice to have you. I've been really wanting to get into this podcast. I've been trying to look for you. The last time I wanted to do this, you were in Kenya. But finally, we are here. What state are you located in?
Yes, I'm glad to be here. I'm in Maryland, Silver Spring, Maryland. That's where I am located.
How's the weather there right now?
It's a little chilly, but, you know, it's, we are heading now to, we are actually in the spring. So we are right there in between. You know how it is.
Yeah, I'm sure you can't wait for the warm weather like I do. I'm in Toronto right now and it's a bit chilly. I can't wait. I'm really waiting for summer.
I love summer. That's my season. So yeah, can't wait.
So Beatrice, it's nice to have you in this podcast. You're my first guest that I am interviewing with a disability. Is that a good word to use?
Actually, it's perfectly fine. Some people say disability, others say differently able, but you know, the word that's commonly used out there is disability. So I think it's okay to use it.
Okay. So, I'll go back and forth, but if I'm wrong, please correct me. I know you have a vision impairment, but before we talk about that, I'd like to know what country you were born in.
All right, so I was born and raised in Kenya for half my life now. Mm-hmm. half of my life was spent in Kenya, and then the other half has been here in the United States.
So your childhood, all like primary and high school, you were in Kenya?
Yes, I came to the U.S. Right after graduating from high school. So I went through, in Kenya, we called it whatever we call elementary and middle school and high school. Here in the U.S., we call it primary school and secondary school education. All of that was done in Kenya.
So take us back with your vision impairment. Is that something you were born with?
Yeah, so I was born visually impaired since birth. The cause is macular degeneration type of illness called cone dystrophy, C-O-N-E, dystrophy. Mm-hmm. But at the time when I was born, we had no idea that I was visually impaired. I mean, there were signs that I was not seeing objects around me. And, you know, sometimes I would just bump into walls, but it's until I was around 6 years old that we clearly got to know that this is something more than just being a clumsy child.
So did you have a hard time playing with the other kids, or how was that?
So I was a pretty active kid, as my parents tell me. And in fact, the way we found out that I'm visually impaired was, you know, one time I was playing with kids. It was my birthday, and my parents, you know, how after kids have cut the cake. We are outside playing and hide and seek, and I'm running, and I ran right into a tree, like, and that was not a small tree. And it was clear. I mean, I was injured. I had to be taken to the hospital. And as my parents tell me, I had a few episodes of that. Growing, you know, be in those childhood years. And that's when, you know, they started adding up this and that, and this incident and that, and it became clear that this was a vision issue. Yes.
So what about school? Did you have a hard time looking at the blackboard, reading your books? Like, how did you go through that?
So at first, so after that incident, you know, my parents, just like, you know, every other parents would do, they started looking for ways to to fix the issue. And one of the things we tried is a lot of glasses. We would go to opticians. If you remember in Kenya, you go to an optician. Going to an ophthalmologist was a luxury. But at some point, we had to go to a retina specialist in Kikuyu Hospital, which is, it's very well known in Kenya, but it's a specialist hospital where they treat people with vision loss. And that's when we knew this is a condition that could not be treated at the time and even now. And so I had to learn how to navigate going to school and learning with other kids in a regular school, because I wasn't blind at the time. The vision has deteriorated to the point where now I'm legally blind, but that was not an easy road. I had to learn how to be resilient, and I had to learn how to be a good advocate for myself, you know, because, you know, there would be teachers who would ask questions like, why can't this be fixed with glasses? And, you know, we would tell them, yeah, glasses are just not working. And some would recommend that I be taken to a special school for the blind, but I was not blind. I still had usable vision. I just could not see detail. So it was tough. It was tough navigating the school system. There's a lot I can say. the challenges that I went through trying to navigate the system. And if you remember, well, I went to school in the 80s. And at that time, they would not talk about special education the way they talk about it now. You know, now that's a very open topic that nobody is embarrassed to talk about in Kenya. But that was not the case at the time. So that was tough, I must say.
So at some point after your schooling in Kenya had a hard time, your parents decided to move to the U.S. So how was that culture shock for you? Because most of us deal with culture shock differently. For you, and with your eyesight, how was that?
So I did go through the school system all the way to end of high school. And then I came to the U.S. before my parents. So I was the first one to permanently relocate to the U.S. Well, at the time I came here as a student, and then later I became a permanent resident. But at the time, it was one of the most difficult decisions that I have ever made, to come out of the country that I know with a vision impairment, get on a plane and go to a country I have never been all by myself. That was tough.
How was the school at that? Sorry to cut you. How was schooling, considering you had a hard time in Kenya? Now you come to a country that is more developed and you have to go to school that there. Was it challenging?
Yes. One, there's the culture shock, just like any other person without a disability would have to go through. Some of the words I would say no one would understand. But I think to take it even deeper in the area of disability, that was tough. For one, I actually got to actually find out my real diagnosis in the U.S. In Kenya, they had an idea what I was, the condition, but they had been diagnosed with something totally different. So here I come, and I have to navigate this new world. And so with being in the U.S., I had to, the good thing, there was a good aspect to it that people here are more helpful. And once you present yourself and explain that, you know, I cannot see well, I would tell my professors I cannot see well, they would give me resources. A lot of times they would actually be the ones providing me with the information on where to go for help. And, you know, and they would guide me from one, you know, source of help to another. And before long, I would find that I have the resources that I need. But culturally, that was not easy. And again, back in Kenya, I was used to having the people who I love around me. Here it was different. And even the friends that I had and the family members that I had are also working and busy. You know what it's like here in the US. It's a very fast paced culture. So, but with time, I was patient and I learned how to navigate, the system here.
You said that when you came to the States, you had a real diagnosis. So what was that diagnosis and what does it look from your perspective?
Okay, so the condition is called cone dystrophy, and I'll probably just take a minute to explain what it is. So with cone dystrophy, so there are two types of cells in the eye. So there's the cones, C-O-N-E, and then there's the rods. So my cones are degenerated. Now, the cones help with detail vision. They help identify with identification of color and seeing the fine details. Those are degenerated, so I barely have any working cone cells. But the rods that do help with peripheral vision and the ability to see the big picture are still pretty active. And so sometimes it takes a while for people to know that I am visually impaired until I cannot read something, a piece of paper that has some print that it's in front of me. Or I tell them I cannot drive because I cannot identify color on the, you know, the traffic lights, you know, and other details. So yeah, that is how my vision is like.
So right now we are doing this over Zoom. Can you tell me what I told Beatrice I'll ask her any question and she's okay with it. So what can you see? What are you seeing when we are doing this over Zoom? When you're looking at me?
I can see a woman, but I'm not able to tell what color you're wearing on your clothes or whether you're light skin or dark skin, or whether you have short hair or long hair. I would have to come very close to you to tell those kind of details. Yeah, and it happens across the board where someone will be like, I'll be like, oh, you look nice in that black pair of pants. And they'll be like, oh, no, it's navy blue. I mean, you know, I could not tell the difference because all those colors look the same to me, you know. Now, black and white, I can differentiate those easily. But, you know, if you're wearing ivory or cream or baby pink and white, all those throw me off completely.
I just had a question in terms of, let's say, for example, I came to live with you.
Okay.
How would the setup be? Because most of us we live a certain way. For your vision impairment, what makes your life bearable?
All right. The first thing you'll notice if you come to live with me is everything stays where it's supposed to be. So if you came to live with me, I'll tell you my ketchup stays on the second compartment of the refrigerator. So if you use it, don't put it on the fourth or in a different cabinet because I'm going to be looking for it forever, you know. So organization skills is really what has helped me navigate this world of independent living, you know, despite the challenges of a disability. I also, you will realize that because I don't drive, I know all the resources there are in the community, like transportation resources. You know, I know the company that I would call if I need to go to the grocery store and back home. And one of the things you'll realize is I'm a person who plans ahead because a lot of these transportation organizations would require me to plan ahead, you know. So I don't do very well with spontaneous trips. And so for someone who doesn't really understand my world, they may not understand why is it that I can't call you in the morning and ask you to show up for a meeting in the afternoon at a different location. You know, I have to plan ahead, you know. So those are some of the things that you will notice. Unlike most people think, there are also people who get scared when they see a person who's blind or legally blind or visually impaired. We live normal lives. Technology is a big aspect mm-hmm. in our world. For example, like from now, I'm using my phone, and I'm using the Zoom. So I use a voice feature, and same thing with my computer. I have voice features on my computer, or on my telephone. So those are some of the things that you will notice. So basically, to answer your question, being visually impaired has taught me different ways of doing the same things. And I think that's usually the harder part, especially trying to explain to other people, like, people asking me questions like, do you read text messages? Do you cook? Technology has made this type of tasks possible.
So yes. That's very interesting. I'm also very, very curious. Considering mm-hmm. I know you're working right now and just thinking to my life coming to America, most of us just zoom into the system. You're looking for every other job. For you, that was not a privilege. How did you navigate like your first jobs? Like what was going through your mind or what did you do?
That's a very good question because coming into for most immigrants, they can truly testify that it's the manual jobs are the most common jobs when you first come to the US. Mm-hmm. And so those are very tough to navigate. So I had a hard time finding work, even working on campus in school, there are jobs that I could not do. But over the years, because I have been here in the United States now for a long time, I have learned one secret to success when it comes to employment, looking for job opportunities, and that is networking. I had to really master that skill of networking. So I go to a place, I meet someone, I strike a conversation with you, and I like what the information you're giving me. I take your phone number, your contacts, we keep in touch. That has been the key for me. And in fact, the job that I am at right now, I got this job because somebody noticed what I was doing, or I was busy posting stuff on social media to empower others about disability. I made contacts and they told me about an opportunity and I applied and I got the job. Mm-hmm. So for me, that has been key. And, they tell us nowadays, most of the jobs are not even advertised, or by the time they are advertised, some companies already know who they're hiring. And so that has been very, very important. The second thing is the power of technology. I had to master my technology. So because for me, I cannot just read the regular prints on a computer, I had to learn how to use voice softwares for the blind. And one that I use right now on my computer is called JAWS for Windows, JAWS, if you want to Google it later. Mm-hmm. It's a speech synthesizer on a computer. So I had to learn how to non-visually operate a computer, operate all the systems that other people are able to operate visually, and as a result, become competent in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. Because you have to be competent. As much as you have a disability and you're looking for a job, you still have to be competent and you must be able to meet the employer's need. So those are the two main ones. But otherwise I had to also master other soft skills like communication, how to work well with teams and things like that. Yes. Wow.
Very, very different thing, different field. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm wondering, and I'm very curious because I know you were in Kenya recently, and having been in America for so long, And having, first of all, having been born in Kenya with a vision impairment, coming to America and having all the resources, and now going back to Kenya, what are the differences that you have seen now compared to when you were a child?
Well, there are many, many. Oh, we can be here forever. That's a topic that is very, very close to my heart. Mm-hmm. I can say this for sure. Mm-hmm. There has been tremendous progress that has been made in the world of disability. Mm-hmm. I'm particularly passionate about the visually impaired because that's the population that I understand most. Mm-hmm. But just talking in general, there was a time people could not even talk about disability, or even parents talk about boldly say that I have a child with a disability. Now that is not the case. Mm-hmm. There are meetups for parents with disabilities. I love that. It was so impressive to see that. Mm-hmm. It was impressive to see that most disabilities are now coming up with their own organizations to advocate mm-hmm. for themselves. So that was great. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, there's still a long, long way to go. And I think now coming from the US, I find that the one thing that if I had a whole lot of money and I would be able to provide this to everybody is technology. Because what technology has done for me is open up the world, open up the ability to go even to higher education, pursue even a master's degree. Technology is not easily accessible in Kenya. And especially for people who are visually impaired, they need it in order to access communication. So that accessibility aspect is still very much lacking. Number two, I think we have a long way in promoting people with disabilities as people who should person-centered communication when it comes to people with disabilities. And what I mean by that is people still address people with disabilities from a third party level, or maybe they think they are not able to speak for themselves. And I don't know why that is the case, but we need to treat them as people who can contribute towards society, people who can speak for themselves. We don't need to be guessing, because I can assure you, they will speak up their minds and they will say what are our needs? Where do we need help? So we need to learn how to advocate and to treat people fairly. I saw a lot of people treating beggars on the street and people who are blind or lame on the street in a way that was very demeaning. And I think coming from here, that really made me cringe. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, access in buildings is still a big issue. You find a lot of, there's a lot of building and construction, Brenda, going on in Kenya. Mm-hmm. And what you will find is that many of these architects are not really following the guidelines that have actually been put on the constitution regarding how they should build buildings, making them accessible for people with disabilities, people with wheelchairs. And you'll find this is all over. Go to churches, go to schools, the places where public access should be very much implemented, it's still not happening.
That's very sad.
And so we need more of that. We need some of these potholes in the middle of the road. Surely a person who has a white cane or a guide dog will definitely fall. And so there's the fear among some people to get around independently. So we need to fix the access issue. I could go on and on, but those are the three that come to mind as you ask that question.
Wow, thank you so much for opening our eyes. And that's very sad, because some governments, like you said, in Kenya are trying to construct this and put these things in our constitution, but unfortunately the enforcement part, implementation part is failing.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much for bringing
we
that.
We need to move that from paper mm-hmm. and reading it on the constitution and to really making some of these laws applicable and really following the law in terms of making the world accessible, not just to people who do not have disabilities, but also to the other members of society with disabilities.
So Beatrice, I forgot to ask you one question. What do you do for a living?
So I am a vocational rehabilitation counselor. I work with people with disabilities. I'm a case manager with the government here in DC. And my role involves helping people with disabilities find employment. So rehabilitating them, which means we help them get job ready by providing them with supports, counseling, therapy services. We train assistive technology, you know, the technology they need so that they are able to work. And then I'm involved in job placement.
Wow, wow. Right in your field and something that you've already had a lived experience and you work in that field. That's great.
Exactly. I love it. This, I always tell my friends I was born to do this because I do it so effortlessly. Mm-hmm. And especially because I do understand the needs of people with disabilities.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Beatrice. I really do appreciate.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now I want to jump back to something you are doing. I know you wrote a book. Can Yes. you talk about your book?
So my book is called Finding Victory Despite the Challenge, Lessons Learned Through the Foggy Eyes. I wrote this book for two reasons. I wanted to tell my story, but beyond telling my story, I wanted to empower and to edify my readers. I am a person of faith. I come from a Christian background. My faith has been a big part of who I am. And so across the book, you will see there are several Christian principles that I derive straight from the Bible that I use to tell my story. But the story, I tell my journey. I have a lot of narratives where I tell how I grew up. What are some of the challenges that I faced? What are some of the victories? Because there have also been some victories along the way. And how the condition I found myself in, the vision impairment, has helped me see life in a different way. And especially in the area of knowing that there is victory despite the challenge we face. So this is a book, whether you are facing a disability or any other type of challenge, you will be edified, you will be empowered, you will be encouraged. And by the time you're done reading, you will know truly, 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 the challenge does not have to keep me down, that there is victory on the other side.
And where can we find the book, Beatrice?
The book is on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble. It's on iBooks. It's in most places where books are sold. You will find the book. So feel free to search it online, I also have it on Kindle. Mm-hmm. So please go there and support me, support the work. And also, this is important to say that 20% of the money that the funds that we receive from the book go towards helping people with vision impairment in the schools for the blind in Kenya. Wow. So I'm doing a lot of work reaching out to the students who are in the high schools. I was recently in Kenya at the Thika School for the Blind, and my plan is to go around to all other schools, empowering them and encouraging them and also equipping them with the skills they need to survive out there in the marketplace once they are done with school. So please go to Amazon. The book is also on Kindle. I know you will be blessed.
Wow. Thank you so much, Beatrice. I will personally go to Amazon and look for the book and put it on my Kindle. I have a lot
thank
of books
you.
On Kindle.
Yes. Yes. A lot of people read books on Kindle, and that's yeah. why I did that. Yes.
It's easier that way. So I want us to turn the conversation to something, some fun questions. But before I do that, okay. I like asking this question. Is sure. there one question you think I should have asked you and I did not ask?
Oh my, your interview was very all-rounded. There's so many aspects to living with a vision impairment. But I think the one thing that I would want to say to the people who are listening is we are more alike than we are different. I know when people see people with disabilities, regardless of whether it's a vision loss or a different type of physical or invisible disability, we see differences before we see the similarities. But generally, we do have more that we have alike than we are different. And then secondly, most people with disabilities now, today, this time and age, have learned to do the same very things that other people do. A person with a vision impairment can go into any career. Obviously, they cannot go into piloting or or, you know, something that requires you to have a 20/20 vision. But for the most part, technology has really solved the problems of inaccessibility. And so you can, a person who has a disability, if you're listening to me, you can become anything you want to become. And so, yeah, I'm excited at where we are. I thank God that we have technology. We are blessed, and there's progress that is being made in this area.
Thank you for sharing your life with us. I personally do appreciate, and I have learned a lot. So I would like to turn this interview to some fun questions.
All right, let's go.
So what are you having for dinner today?
Okay, I am having a dish called chapati and dengu. And I'll explain to the viewers what that is. So chapati is it's a wheat bread. It's a flat wheat bread that I truly enjoy, and I know how to make it very well. It looks like the naan. Eh? So for those who have eaten Indian food. And then dengu is, what is dengu? I'm trying to find the, I think they're called mung beans.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. M-U-N-G, mung beans. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So that's what I'm having for dinner, and some vegetables.
Oh, great. 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 And what's your favorite fun activity?
I love singing. I could sing all day, Brenda.
That's good. That's good.
I love reading. I do love reading. Lately, I've become quite a reader.
So do you read most of your books using the technology that JAWS you were talking about?
Yes. Yeah, so I do use JAWS for reading if it's online on my book. On my phone, I download books on iBooks, and on my phone, there's a software called VoiceOver. It's actually on every iPhone. Oh. Under your accessibility features, you can go and look at it. It's called VoiceOver. It reads everything for a person who is visually impaired. And so I download my books, and I turn on my headphones when I'm exercising, when I'm cooking. I read. You know, knowledge is power, Brenda.
That's true. Knowledge is power. Information is power.
Yes.
So what's your favorite holiday and why?
I think I love Christmas so much. It's just family get together. That's the one time most of us in our family get together, and we just celebrate our faith and Christ, and also the gift of family and all the blessings that we have. So Christmas takes it for me.
So do you travel to, I know your family is in California. Do you travel to California every Christmas?
Yes, most of the time. I think 90-something% of the time I'm in California with them.
Oh, that's good.
Yes. And it's usually a good family time. And I'm grateful that I have my parents here, my siblings as well, here in the United States.
That's a great, great blessing.
Yes.
So my last fun question to you is, I like promoting all different cultures or different countries, different tribes. Can you tell us how you say God bless you in your mother tongue?
That's easy. Gai akoradime.
Gai akoradime.
So, yeah, so God bless you.
Any other word you'd like to teach us in your mother tongue?
Meguadete, Brenda.
Which means?
I just said, I love you, Brenda.
There you are. Thank you so much.
You know,
much.
I'm not sure if the audience know how we've been friends for many years. So I'm grateful that we got to do this.
Thank you so much for really taking the time. I'm humbled. I really, really humbled.
Thank you.
And as I end, before I ask anything, is there anywhere, do you have a platform, website, social media handles that people can get in touch with you, just in case they need to get in touch with you, Beatrice?
Yeah, so I do have a page called Beatrice Waidhaka, Finding Victory Despite the Challenge on Facebook. So that's mainly where I am. And if you have any question or you need any support, please email me. on bwaithaka, bwaithaka @gmail.com.
And I will put all this information on the show notes so that people can have your information just in case they need to get in touch with you. Beatrice, I want to say thank you again for taking the time. This was a wonderful interview, for opening our eyes to some of the challenges that you do face. Thank you. Thank you. And as I like saying in Swahili, asante sana.
Thank you for having me. I feel very, very honored to be part of this show today. Thank you.
God bless you. Take care. Bye.
God bless you too. Bye.
And just before I end this podcast, I'd like to thank you, my listeners, for the support and the love you've given towards this podcast. It's been really a great blessing listening to these stories of my African brothers, of African brothers and sisters in the diaspora. Some of you have asked, why aren't you posting a lot of content like you used to? Well, as most of you know, the 2 years have been challenging for most people. I'm not an exception. I needed to take a break, and I truly did take a break. I went to Kenya, I relaxed and rejuvenated, and I'm grateful that I did that. So I'm planning to restructure this podcast. I'm trying to work on that content. So just to let you know, the podcast is still on, but the episodes will be sporadic. They'll be spaced out as I upload. But as I continue, I want to tell you that I love our similarities, our differences, our diversities, our languages, our tribes as Africans. Let's continue to tell our stories. Let's not give up. We are a community. God bless you. And as I always like saying in Swahili, asante sana. Thank you.